One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, this is Ryan Fraser.
This is Troy Daly.
This is Gus Boyett.
This is Don Hutchison.
This is Jürgen Klopp, and you're listening to The Big Interview with Graeme Hunter.
Thank you, Jürgen. I travel to all these interviews from Barcelona, and our socios, our beloved members, keep us on the road. This independent podcast wouldn't happen without them. Please go to patreon.com/Graeme Hunter right now to join us, to become a socio, and to get every interview we produce without adverts and before it goes out on the main feed, plus lots of bonus content, including the chance to put questions to our guests and to me via the monthly Q&A. You will also get bonus content every month, including the audio versions of my regular columns for ESPN. So do please go to patreon.com/Graeme Hunter and join the club and get your family and friends to do so. Maybe even strangers in the street. Love you. Okay, we told you it was coming. This is part two of the big interview with the mighty Brian Laudrup. I'd say it's a story to restore your faith in football. European Super League? Let's talk about winning the European Championship. Let's talk about a team that thought they were going on their holidays. Anyway, those of you who listened to part one already know the build-up. Those of you who didn't, start now. Quickly, hurry along in this episode. Brian will break down Denmark's progression through the tournament from the faltering early displays via the crazy golf and the Burger King or whatever it was. Fast food at a tournament. Yes, in 1992 you could do all that. And suddenly an influx of Danes into Sweden, a growing assurance as the Danes claimed major scalps like France and Holland en route to the final against Germany. Yes, there's a mention for England too. Overall, this is remarkable. A story full of good people doing things they didn't really believe that they'd be able to do. Lots of mentions of Schmeichel, Michael Laudrup, Muller Nielsen. Overall, one of the most thrilling international stories ever. And so many of you won't have heard it told this well ever before. We are The Big Interview. Thanks for listening. The international debut in Vienna, where you were born. Muller Nielsen coming to Munich to say, let's make up. The momentum of things that seem meant to happen builds with the fact that your first group game, as you've mentioned, in most of the Scandinavian countries, English football is kind of like a big brother or a granduncle. You were force-fed it on television. There's such a massive following for United and Liverpool there, etc., etc., etc. And your first game is England. I want to make two comments and throw to you. If you look at the England side, now with retrospect, Woods, Keith Carroll, Pearce, Keown, Walker, Platt, Stephen, Lineker and Carlton Palmer. I've read out more star-studded, more glamorous England 11s than that. And I also want to throw to you, they weren't to be sneered at, but if you read out Schmeichel, Sivabek, Nielsen, Olsen, Anderson, Kristofta, Jensen, Poulsen, Christensen and Vilfort, you're still at that stage making sure that you're fully ready, that you're fully fit. But Schmeichel again said to me at the end of that game in the dressing room, he uses the phrase, the atmosphere was like a funeral, because they all thought that they should have beaten England and comfortably. Do you agree with that?
I have to take you
just 6 days back from that game, because when we meet at the hotel in Denmark, and we, you know, we're going out for the first training session, we are all gathered in the middle of the pitch, and Richard Mel Nielsen, he's standing right in the center of it, and he says, "You know what this means to Danish football and to, you know, the Danish fans, but you have to realize, guys, that we are not going to the Euros to just make up the numbers. We are going to the Euro 92 to win it." And we were like, what is he on? You know, I would like something of that. You know, that was, we felt, I mean, yeah, I mean, he wanted to build up the team, obviously, but again, you know, I think he laid down a marker to understand that, yeah, we only have a week to prepare. Perhaps we've got players that are not 100% fit, but we go across to Sweden as the biggest underdog ever in football history, with a good team, with a team that knows each other very well. We know each other's strengths, weaknesses. We have got a very pragmatic way of playing football, but we have got quality, no doubt about that. But nobody expects Denmark to do anything. And for us, if you look back in 88, Denmark didn't get a point in that group section they were in. So what we said, we went straight to the press before that game and said, if we just get 1 point, then we're better than the 88 team, you know? So, and basically that was enough for us. So we went into that game against England, obviously expecting them to be a very tough game. You know, they're prepared for 3, perhaps even 4 weeks. We knew that there were a lot of criticism back in England with that team, perhaps not being as prolific as, you know, former international teams. But again, you know, being, I think people expect that England to beat us quite comfortably. And we played very well. I mean, we came out, we ran as much as we could. So we defended well, and we even hit the post. I think it was John Jensen hitting the post in the second half. So I think Peter Schmeichel was outstanding, as we knew he had to be if we had any chance of getting any points whatsoever. And as I say, after the game, we were disappointed. Can you imagine that? I mean, preparing for a week, 0-0. 1 point against England, we were in the competition, but we felt like we should have beaten England because we were a handful that day, and it just showed the character we had. You know, we were just getting into. I think if we had been beaten by England 3-0, I think that would have been it. But I think that built up a momentum that if we can get a point against England. Perhaps against Sweden, if we can get something out of that game, yeah, you never know. And then all of a sudden, you play France in the final game. So it was a huge turning point, and it made us realize perhaps we can do something here. We can't win it, but at least we can upset a few people.
We're really lucky. I love the phrase that you said, we were a handful then. That's a great phrase. We're lucky to be supported by our sponsors, Bet365, and they've said that they don't think it's a myth, and I'm not sure if it is, but Hummel were your kit sponsors then, and the story goes that the arrival of Denmark suddenly into the Euro was too quick for them, and that they had to manufacture strips. In the first game, at least the England game, I think, the team had to wear the under-21 strips.
It's true, and the other thing was, you know, whereas all the other teams, you know, turned up in Sweden with nice suits and stuff like that, you know, ties and looked fantastic, you know, they didn't have time to create that for us, you know. So we turned up in Hummel's short sleeve shirts, green. They were absolutely horrific. We looked like the greatest amateur team ever. But I mean, I think that's the myth as well, and it just created the idea of, you know, us just going across, you know, after a couple of training sessions, playing a game, and it makes the story even better because it's part of the story, obviously, because we were very concentrated. I mean, we went into it giving it all. We wanted to really create something, and you know, again. by doing it the way we did and with the smile on our faces, I think people, you know, the press loved us as well. And all these stories about, you know, going to McDonald's, stuff like that, which we did, you know, was part of that fantastic, you know, story as well.
The world was focused on Scandinavia in that time because in your country, there was the Maastricht vote coming up, a lot of campaigning, a lot of controversy. If I'm not wrong, it was also the Silver Jubilee of for your royals, which I guess for Danes, still quite a royal-focused country then, was a big occasion. Sweden were hosting the Euros. It's Sweden next. Generally, how are Danes and Swedes? Is it England, Scotland?
I think it's perhaps if you go back 500, 600, 700 years ago, it would have been like that, I think. But it's changed now. We're obviously, I mean, rivals, but it's not as bad as perhaps England and Scotland. So, but I think that, I think actually when Sweden went out of the Euros, I think a lot of Swedish people, you know, rooted for Denmark because they love the idea about a team, you know, joining in the last minute, actually going to a final and stuff like that. And I think helping the opponents were Germany. I think not a lot of people perhaps wanted Germany to win it. Yeah, having said that, it was incredible. Yeah.
Did you deserve to win the next game? Because at the end of the 90 minutes, when we Brolin scores on what is kind of a counter, kind of a breakaway, you've 1 point after two games and you're not selling that as part of the great master plan. Did you deserve more out of that game?
No, we did not deserve anything out of that because I think the Swedes were very, you know, very solid, very strong, physically a very tough team to play against. I think it was actually strange to see because I thought they had a very good team in that during the Euros. But having said that, they were the only team to beat Denmark, so I think they can be happy about that, you know. And I remember the Danes commentator saying, okay, that's it, Denmark are out of the Euro 92, you know, after two games. They didn't realise that by beating France in the final game and if Sweden beat England, then we could get into the semi-finals, and that's what happened. But again, you're talking about the Maastricht vote there, and I remember the Danish foreign minister saying, if you can't join them, at least beat them.
So you're at your do or die moment. This is what your wife was saying to you, don't be crazy, go back. This is what Poulsen was dreaming of when you phoned him from Munich to Dortmund. And this is what Møller Nielsen was talking about, because football being football, nobody should say it's impossible. But France are an interesting side. Bruno Martini, a lot of people will have forgotten about. After which, Laurent Blanc, Basile Boli. Cassoni is less well-known, but Amoros was a phenomenal footballer. Didier Deschamps, Cantona, Papin, Luis Fernandez, one of the greats of European football. Managed by, I'd have to say, not one of my favourite people in Michel Platini. No way can you say Denmark don't win this. But I'd imagine France are favourite for the game. I think they were pre-tournament favourites. Although Germany were strong and Holland were defending. What was the first of all, did Crazy Golf help you win this? How did Crazy Golf help you win the tournament? Did you go and play a little bit of pitch and putt?
Yeah, that's that was a good way to keep us, you know, the players entertained. And but I have to go back again and say before the game against, just to show you that the lack of support we had. When we played England in Malmo, which is, as you know, just across from Denmark, only 3,000 Danish fans came across because nobody, you know, believed in our team. And it just shows you how it changed. Then against Sweden, we had like the likes of 10,000. When we played France, we're talking about 20,000, and it just went on from there, you know. So our popularity went from zero to absolute heroes, you know, and it, that's part of the story as well. But we went into that France game, you know, knowing that they were a phenomenal side, some big players in there, as you mentioned, a very young Cantona, Jean-Pierre Papin, who I played with at AC Milan. What a player he was, what a finisher he was, Michel Platini. But just by looking on the sideline and seeing Michel Platini, I'd met Platini, you know, previously. Obviously, my brother played with Platini at Juventus. So, I mean, you could just see the grandness of things, you know, what a team they were. They expected to get into the final. And I remember, you know, standing, you know, just before the game when we went on the pitch, you know, they were looking at us like, you know, this is going to be easy. And you should never do that against Danes, you know, because there is something in us which, you know, we gain strength from that, you know, and we don't like to be favorites, but underdog role is we love it.
And that put us down.
No, exactly. And then we came out and for the first game with Henrik Larsson, you know, who was a very good midfield player. Who went on to play in Italy as well? He played his first game, and it was funny because I think he played in Denmark back then. He was sold after the Euros and went to Pisa, but he got, you know, he had a fantastic, you know, shooting ability with both feet, and the first goal he just smashed into the top corner with his left foot, and I think it was quite early on,
8 minutes.
So that changed the whole setup of the game. You could see the French. That was one of the few things they didn't expect to happen. You know, they had a game plan going into the game, but you know, being, you know, 1-0 behind was not one of them. So that changed the whole dynamic, and they really went for it. And eventually, through Jean-Pierre Papin, he equalized. Yeah.
How much weight could I put on what happens in terms of Müller-Nielsen's interpretation of the match? Because famously in 86 against Spain, Piontek, very much true to his football philosophy, when Spain look as if they're on top, he says, let's attack more, and puts on another attacker. When Papin scores his goal just around the hour mark, I think, and I don't know if you're pissed off with him, or whether you realised, but you know, the recovery from the ligament surgery had left you at this stage needing to come off, ready to come off, a bit ticked off at him. But he waits, he times it, and you'd argue that in Elstrup, the proof is that he chose well. That moment, how crucial is the switch as you come off, as Elstrup comes on? What was it that Müller-Nielsen got right?
That was the best switch he could ever do, I think. And I went to him after the game and said, I was very happy about getting, you know, changed at that point, because I was completely knackered. You know, I have to say that I was running short of fuel. I was really struggling playing three games in the space of just more or less, was it 7-8 days? And that was exactly my worry before the Euros, that was going to happen. So for me, being taking off, that was completely understandable. I was thankful for it. And we just hoped that Lars Elstrup, who hadn't played much in the Euros, could come up with something. He was you know, very well known as a typical goal scorer, not a great player, perhaps, you know, doing a lot of things out on the park, but in the box, he would come alive. And surely that great pass from, I think it was Flemming Poulsen. It looks like he was offside, Flemming Poulsen, but he wasn't. And then he just went through a wee cross and he tapped it in. And what a feeling that was. We went absolutely berserk on the bench, you know. And it was like, you know, I mean, something which and I have to say, before the game, when you know, when the players we spoke about this France game, we thought we could do something. We really thought that it was going to be a very close game, but if we could upset them and work our socks off like we did all the tournament, then we could create an upset. And you could see, you know, the French players began to argue on the park, you know, nice. And then, you know, you have them, yeah. You know, then they're, you know, they're in your pocket. And I think the goal came at the right time. You know, we could defend the rest of the game, put a lot under pressure, obviously, by the French. They went all out for it, but we held it, and we were in the semi-final.
We've got people called socios who are like seen to golders, but they're people who've been behind us. This is our sixth anniversary, so thank you. This is our sixth anniversary as we speak. And Robert Ryan is one of them. He's an extraordinary guy. You'll be able to guess who he supports by how he opens his message to you. Hello, Sir Brian. So, yeah, Robert is definitely an ultra Rangers fan. He says that he watched the movie documentary about your Euro 92 side recently. He really loved it. He adores you. He calls you one of the lightning rods of creativity and spark in the side, and he wonders how much you embraced and enjoyed that responsibility. And tied into that, I want to think now, because Robert's point is that as you've beaten France, you're through the group, you know you're going to play the holders. And the holders, if I have my way in life, I look at the Dutch team and I say that they are a better team, they're more thrilling and creative team than the team you ultimately beat in the final. I wonder, taking from Robert's point there, at this stage with Holland in the near distance, what's happening with... Are you chatting? Are you getting time to chat to your dad, to Michael, who's sitting on with a kind of not a split heart, but a little bit sore and excited? Your wife has encouraged you to just say, "Focus, go." To what extent in the gap between France and Holland is there a chance to relax, to speak, to try and not get worried now that there's expectation because you've beaten France? What was happening then?
But now you get to a stage where. Where you can actually see, you know, the final in front of you, you know, and we couldn't see that when we went to Sweden. You know, it was, as I say again, it was all about getting 1 point, taking from there. If we had 1 point, then that would have been a success. But now, all of a sudden, you're actually looking to play a semi-final against the holders. And for me personally, that was the best team at the Euros. For me, I mean, if you look at the players they had, it's phenomenal. Bergkamp, you know, Van Basten, Coleman. I mean, you can just keep on mentioning those, you know, legendary names. But there's one thing about the Dutch, and I've played in Holland myself, that sometimes, you know, they're so convinced of their own greatness, that perhaps sometimes they can become a little arrogant. And I think they did. I think they, you know, for them, playing Denmark was a free ticket to the final. That was my impression. And I think, as I say with the French, even before we went on the pitch again, you know, the Dutch, they looked a little bit like, yeah, you know, Gullit as well, you know, all these great players. And we were standing like small boys, you know, and, you know, honored to play against the likes of these, you know, truly world famous names. But there was one thing that we always talked about in before the game. It was like the Dutch will always, they play very open. So they will give you space. If we can defend well enough and use the pace, the likes of myself, Flemming Poulsen, and then again, if Henrik Larsen could get in, you know, close to the area, then we have a chance. But we have to defend well, because they have got so much skill on the ball. They have got so much creativity that if we are not compact, then forget it. You will get slaughtered. Again, like against the French, we scored a goal early on. Henrik Larsen 1-0, and again that changed the dynamic, you know, and we, you know, we felt that getting the first goal, attacking, and we attacked I think a lot more in that game than we did in all the other games in total. So yeah,
that's a deliberate decision from Møller Nielsen to use what you've identified. There'll be space, so let's not just wait for the space to arrive. Let's try and punch into it, right?
Yeah, because they have got so many players that, that wants to go forward. You know, even their fullback were very, you know, attack minded. So obviously, we knew that there would be a lot of space, you know, down those channels, and we used that to fantastic effect. I had a chance early on, almost one on one. I missed that one, unfortunately. I think it came too early in the game, so I was not ready for it. But not an excuse, but just to try and tell you why. I think we were a little bit surprised how much space we actually got. So you know, by scoring the first goal, we felt that we could do this again. I mean, we did it against the French. If we can hold on and, you know, take the pressure off the game, controlling, you know, the passing and not lose the ball too often, which sometimes can be a problem if you're not 100% fit, then we could do it again. And then eventually they equalized, I think through, was it Bergkamp? Yeah.
Yeah, it's 4 minutes from the end. Bergkamp gets the first. You're still, because Larsson hasn't put you 2-1 up yet, but the two scorers are Bergkamp and Rijkaard. You talk about Bergkamp, who to me is one of the outstanding footballers of modern European history, and it, because he didn't win the Euro like the trio who went to Milan did in 88, I think he's still slightly underthought of, but for my taste, and I know you share a club in that you spent time at Ajax, successfully at Ajax, so did Bergkamp. To me, he just glided. He was super intelligent, tough as nails, you know, to hold his own in the Premier League later on in life. Just an extraordinary footballer.
Oh, a fantastic footballer. And I think he was just back then, you know, finding his feet in the national team as well. The likes of Gullit, Coleman, Van Basten, obviously the big, huge, huge names, but he was taking over for them. It was a delight to play against teams like that, you know, because you could see the way they handled the ball. You know, every player attacked, every player defended. You know, from Johan Cruyff philosophy, it was fantastic to play against. But as I say again, you know, we had something which, when Henrik Larsson, you know, put us 2-1 up just before halftime, that we thought, okay, 45 minutes and then we're in the final. We have to make sure that we keep on going. We were tired. Yes, we were. And eventually again, you know, I was knocked down in the second half and taking off again, not being able to play the full 90 minutes. And watching Rijkaard scoring the equalizer, I think it was just, was it 5 or 6 minutes from time? And we thought, oh my God, you know, we're so close. And you could see on all the players that they were, you know, running so low on fuel, not being able to, you know, get the legs forward. So it's just about, you know, keeping tight, just keep the players back and hope for the penalties and make Peter Schmeichel do his job.
Before the rest of this big interview, I'd like to tell you that our entire archive of audio and video content is now on our new YouTube channel. We've begun filming all of our interviews, and there are already loads of clips with guests, including Rio Ferdinand, Connor Cody, Brendan Rodgers and Jamie Carragher, plus full interviews for you to watch and to share. Please do share with friends. Go to YouTube and search Graham Hunter, or click on the link in the show notes to this episode and become a subscriber. I honestly think you'll enjoy it. Thanks.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term medical plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Our kind sponsors, Bet365, want you to answer a true question. It's important that you're not playing when you're injured or coming back. It's a very tough game. There's going to be extra time. It might have been the right timing for you to be off the pitch. But for a leader, for a truly great footballer like you, there's a lot of frustration that you can't help them see out extra time or win an extra time. And their question is, by the time it comes to penalties, are you happy or sad that you're not on the pitch? Not everybody loves a penalty shootout.
Yeah, I have to say that I would have loved to have a go. No doubt about that. Usually, I always say that I prefer to have the final one. I mean, the fifth shot, because either you're hero or you're zero. So it can go either way. So I've always done that.
It's worth the risk. It's worth the risk, because if you want to be a hero, you have to accept that you might be the villain.
Yeah, and I think I've met a lot of footballers that are saying, I'll never take a penalty in the shootout, or I'll never take the final one because I haven't got the nerves for that. I didn't have a problem with that. But you have to accept that your role can change from, as I say, from the villain or the hero, you know. So that was it. But unfortunately, due to a dead leg, I wasn't able to play. But I could see the players, you know, the five players that were selected, how nervous they were. I mean, because all of a sudden, you know, that was the moment that showed me how far we had come, to be honest, because the first games were like, yeah, lighthearted, laid-back approach, you know, no expectations. It's quite easy to go into a tournament like that, being a favorite with all the pressure on your shoulders. It's a completely different ballgame. But right there, it was all about five shooters, one goalkeeper, and just a few minutes away from a final. And I mean, as a Danish international, you can't expect to play finals. You can play at the Euros, yeah, but play the real final. I mean, it's something which comes perhaps across every 100 years or something like that, if at all. So all of a sudden you can see on the five players that, you know, it hit in and sunk in that we are so close to actually play at the Euros. Fine.
Let's cheat a little bit. There's a time machine. And I've taken you right back to that day. The draw has been made for which end they're going to shoot from. We know that the 10 first kickers are going to be Koeman, Van Basten, Bergkamp, Rijkaard, Witsche. And for Denmark, Larsen, Poulsen, Elstrup, Vilfort and Christofte. The shootout hasn't been played. The time machine has done its magic. Who wins that shootout, Brian?
Denmark. I mean, if you look at as you say, at the kickers, you know, you would say that you know, it's a world class setup from, you know, the Dutch players obviously are huge favourites, and there was at least one player you would say he's a dead cert, and that would be Van Basten, and he's the one who misses it, you know. So sometimes, you know, even the best players in the world can get to you. You know, the emotions, the nerves, and you just have to say that Peter Schmeichel, he did extremely well, no doubt about that. But again, if I had looked at their players, I would say I mean, he's a world-known, world-famous goal scorer. He was so good at taking penalties. I've seen him so many occasions doing that. So for him to be the only one to actually miss it, it was incredible. And then I have to say, the guy who actually scored our final goal, Chris Tofter, he played with my dad at Brøndby. And we have to go back many, many years before the Euros, Euro 92. And I just loved the guy. He was one of the most elegant footballers you would ever see. Perhaps he didn't have as big a career as perhaps he could have had, but he had his moment. And that was certainly it, playing in the Euros and then score that fantastic, beautifully taken penalty. I think he just moved, was it half a yard back from the ball and just, you know, did a dummy and put it into the side of the goal. It was laid back style, which summed up the way we actually went to sweep nothing.
Feel free to put me down here, but I am a romantic. Was that the call of the amateur Danes there? Was that the call of the people who used to play for fun and for show? And there's a bubble around him going, this isn't the European Championship semi-final. This isn't pressure. This is me and a ball and an opposition guy. And amateur football says, I'm going to do this.
Exactly. And you know what? He'd done it so many times on the training pitch. But you can do it there with no pressure, no people watching, but certainly not in the semi-final. So when I looked at the way he put down the ball and did exactly what he's done so many times on the pitch, you know, on the training ground, I was like, my heart was almost stopping. You know, it was, I said, no, he can't do that. We are talking about a semi-final. If he scores, we're in the final. What is he thinking about? But he was such a laid-back character. You know, he was a wonderful footballer, you know, naturally gifted, and he had a belief in himself which made it completely right to do that, you know, because it was the perfect, let's say, end to a semi-final, which I felt that perhaps would have been a step too far for Denmark. But during the 90 minutes, we showed them that we were actually, again, as I say, a handful, which we had been for many teams that in that tournament. And now, you know, we're in the final.
It's a truly beautiful moment. And we're drawing to the close, the finale, the ultimate beauty, because Luis Aragon has always said, finals aren't for playing and they're for winning. Let's stop before the final and tell me anything you want. Because the influx of Danes must have been gigantic. You must have been talking to family to measure where you'd got. I also want to touch on, Michael, I don't know. Not everybody that plays together stays friends. I have no idea how the two of you are. I can only say from my experience, I found him an extraordinary man. And I'm not sure, my predilection goes for Jim Leighton because he won my club the European Cup Winners' Cup. I live in Spain for 20 years. Iker Casillas has changed my life. But I'm not convinced I've ever seen a better, more complete goalkeeper than Schmeichel. And I'm also not convinced that he's completely Danish in his mentality. You've talked about the Germans. It feels like there's a drop of German, a drop of English, there's a little smidgen of Danish. Am I making a...
No, you're absolutely correct. And I think that made him arguably one of the best goalkeepers of time, of all time. I think he brought something which, again, going back to Brøndby, you know, we have had some fights, Peter Schmeichel and myself. You know, he yelling at me and me yelling back, you know. But what he always did, and he must have been a nightmare for the defenders playing in front of him, you know, because he was such a, he had this ability and, you know, this character. It was all about winning, 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 winning. He was at times a nightmare to play with, but again, I think he was exactly what a team needs. And I think you've heard that from players, Manchester United as well, you know, saying about Peter Schmeichel, he could be a nightmare at times, you know. But again, he was a winner, a serial winner. He was the perhaps in his mentality more, as you say, German than Danish, because we and perhaps he brought that winning mentality to the Danish national team, and I think he was one of the reasons. We have to say that without his heroics between the sticks, we wouldn't have won it, especially in the final. I would say that in the final, he showed the world what he was capable of. I recall one save, which I think came from Klinsmann, who just turns and shoots, and it's down in, I think it's the right-hand corner. And he just touches it, and it just goes to, you know, just behind the post. And it was one of these saves that you couldn't expect him to save that. But he just shows the world that what he was capable of. He was a big lad. He was vocal. He was, you know, quick in 1v1s. Even in training sessions, it was difficult to score against him. I mean, you always had the feeling if you came one on one with him, I haven't got a chance. So that's what he brought with him, and he made all the players around him so much better. So for me, he's up there with the most important players in old football time, I would say.
I know you won't be shy of telling me if I'm wrong, but I wonder if, looking forward to this game, the fact that you've played with Jürgen Kohler and Stefan Reuter and played with Effenberg, and that you've played against Ilkner, Buchwald, Helmer, probably, I think, not played against Bremer and Klinsmann, who'd gone to Inter at the time you were in Germany, but you've played against Hassler, you've played against Karl-Heinz Riedle, you've played against Thomas Doll, either for Erdogan, a hell of a lot of names, but either for Erdogan or Bayern Munich, you've played against Dortmund or Karlsruhe or Köln. And as good as they are, to you at least, and to Poulsen as well, they're known quantities. That helps a little bit?
Yeah, I think so. I think, obviously, having played, I played with, as you mentioned, Reuter, Effenberg and Kohler, and they were top-class footballers, no doubt about that.
Really, really top-class.
I have to say, Jürgen Kohler is one of the best man markers I've ever seen. You know, his games against the likes of Van Basten, you know, the years before that, they were like, you know, games of the game. You know, it was incredible to watch.
He could have survived in Catenaccio, couldn't he, in the Italian era of, he was like a limpet.
He was so good on, you know, because back then you played with man markers, not comparing today where you play in a different way, but he was a specialist in neutralizing, you know, good attacking players. And I played against him in training sessions, you know. Oh, that was tough. I mean, Maldini was tough at Milan, but Jürgen Kohler at Bayern Munich, that was really difficult, because he knew all the tricks, to be honest. And but again, you know, Stefan Reuter, one of the quickest fullbacks you ever find. And they had, and Effenberg, he was beginning to, create a name of himself as well. And speaking about Effenberg, you know, he phoned me on the night before the game, of the final. And he was like, oh, fantastic, Brian, you're in the final. Like, you know, it's a huge surprise that you're in the final, not that we're in the final, but it will be great to play against you. We were quite good friends at Bayern. And he says, we're going to swap shirts after the game. Yeah, no doubt about that. So if you want a winner's medal, your winner's shirt, you get it. And then what happened after the game, all of a sudden he was gone. And I never got to see him before, you know, before after the summer when we joined up at Fiorentina.
Did it feel like he was slightly patting you on the head again?
Again, you know, the thing you shouldn't do to a Dane, you know. And I think we went out into that game. I mean, if we were struggling early on in that competition, we were really struggling to find 11 fit players, because we had so many, you know, I had a dead leg. We had players with hip problems, you know, calf problems. I think John Siewerbeck was playing actually with an injured calf. So we were really struggling. We only had, I think, 3 days between the semi-final and the final. So it was all about getting these players treated, no training sessions whatsoever, just getting these players, you know, fit to play 90 minutes. And we have to say, if I mean, we had a feeling, and I have to be honest with you, we said before the game, we have a chance, but we need to be very cautious because, you know, we've got so many small and niggling injuries that if we lose those players, then that will be it. So if we can keep it nil-nil as long as possible, you never know what's going to happen. So that's the mentality we went into that game. And there's something about John Jensen hitting the goal, which didn't happen that often. And at the warm-up before the game, he was actually exercising that shot, and he was not hitting the goal once in 10 shots. And then he got, you know, the ball, I think it was around 20 minutes, 25 minutes into the first half, I think so, something around that. And he just punched it beautifully with his right foot, and it went straight into the top corner. And what a goal that was. And that goal, if ever a goal can give you energy, that was the one. Because all of a sudden, all the tired legs, the mental stress of it all, you know, so many things happening around you for such a short space of time, all that just disappeared. And that gave us the feeling that if we, and with Peter Schmeichel, as I say, doing his heroics, if we can keep that out, then we could lift the trophy.
But I think, I know you were detailing something that happened historically when pre-final John isn't hitting the target in the practice shots. But I think you spoke euphemistically about it because he wasn't really a scorer. The goals, getting near the goals, you were being gentle in it. Getting near the goals kind of gave him vertigo. But he seems to have been, if not Schmeichel-esque character, quite a character nonetheless. I'm not sure what Faxa actually means, but he's widely known as Faxa Jensen. I think he knew what nightlife was about. I think he was quite an exuberant, confident man. And if I'm not wrong, he kind of told everybody, what's the big fuss about the goal? This is what I do.
This is what I do. Well, he would hit goals like that perhaps once, twice a season. I mean, we're talking about that. He could do it. I mean, he had a good shot. I know that Arsenal fans are still waiting for it. But having said that, I think he was quite an underrated footballer. I think he has strong legs. He was running a lot. Good technique, actually. He was good on the ball. He would put himself in front of the team. You know, he was a real team player. Actually, his name Fats is a beer brand here in Denmark, one of the smaller ones. So that's why I'm not. So that's why he was always called Faxa. But he was a great lad. He was great fun. He was one of these guys that always, you know, would say something that would make you laugh. You know, he was a guy that you gathered around. And so for him to get that goal and eventually went on to go to Arsenal after that, you know, had a very good career. But it was very unexpected to actually see facts of getting that goal. But having said that, you know, it was a strange year 92 because none of the attacking players did get on the score sheet, which is quite unique, really. Pauls and I, we used to say that we did so much in terms of running that we created space for them. But having said that, you know, it was great to have players like that. Even Kim Vilfort, you know, that was one of the other stories who had to leave the camp at some point to go back to his very ill daughter. He came back for the final because his daughter told him to play the final, which he was not, you know, sure of. And he came back and got the winning goal as well. So we had a number of good individual players from midfield that could actually get the goals, and that made the difference.
I don't want to be stupid, Brian, I really don't, but so many times in this story, you've talked about things happening, events conspiring. We've established, and you know from me, that the respect for your ability, character, the way in which you treated the tournament is absolute. But when you top off Vienna and Møller Nielsen reaching out and Yugoslavia, and then you mention Tim Vilfort, is there any part destiny plays in this? He goes away, his daughter will subsequently die. She sends him back to play. As you're a dad, I'm a dad. I'm not sure I could. I don't know what I would do. But he does come back. He scores the winning goal. Is it stupid to ask you to feel that destiny sometimes intervene in our lives?
I completely understand where you come from. I think having thought about the Euro 92 for so many years, I remember Premier Elkjær Larsen, he was doing the commentary in the final for Danish television. And, you know, when the final whistle blew, he says, this victory, this title, this European championship will change the players' lives forever, which is quite big words. But in some respects, he was completely right. And I think there is a humble way to look back now 29 years ago. But we have, you know, I've thought about this for so long that it was almost destiny. It was like it was destined for us to go and win this tournament, despite not being able to prepare quite well, despite perhaps illness to some of the players' children, despite perhaps not being able to almost field 11 players for the final that were fit to play. It was like there was a footballing God saying, sometimes you have to turn things, you know, around. And even to this day, you know, you can, well, not at least the last year due to the corona pandemic, but before that, I could meet people around the world saying, you know, even an American or Mexican, or say, oh, Brian, I was there. I remember what we did exactly on that day when you won the final. And we, you know, we saluted the Danish team. It's fantastic to look at the fact that it has touched so many people, not only in our country, but around the world. And I think that's the nice thing about, again, the underdog role. It must be difficult sometimes to be favorites like Germany, like Italy, perhaps like England as well, Spain, those teams. But for us, it was certainly what built the momentum and what built the dream. And again, I have to go back and say, Richard Møller Nielsen, he used what we call pocket philosophy. I don't know whether you say that in English, but it was like when he told us, let's go over there and win it. It was about building our self-belief. And he did that. You have to say that without perhaps those few words, I think we could have gone across, played 1, 2, 3 games and going back on holiday and say, what a fantastic achievement that was. Nobody expected anything. We got 1 point. That's fine. Let's go back on the beach. But he made us realize that we have a role to play. And perhaps that role was destiny.
The way to wrap this up, the last one, Brian, must be, if you can pick something, a memory in the madness that follows. I don't know if it's the dressing room. I don't know if it's seeing your family. I don't know if it's the parade. I don't know if it's just getting away on holiday and going, now I can breathe out. But if you had to pick something that happens following that victory that will live with you forever, what is it?
I think the return from Sweden. You have to realize we had been living in like a bubble. We talk about the corona bubbles right now, but we lived in a bubble in Sweden for 3 weeks. We didn't really hear a lot of things, what was going on back home. We only got to see some newspapers where we could actually, when we beat Holland, there were 50,000 people in the city squares, you know, and people were like crazy. And we thought, oh my God, what is going on back home? That was the real. Then we began to get an idea of how crazy things were back home. But when we landed, we were received by two fighter jets on both wings, escorting the flight to the airport. And we went over the city centre, and it was completely packed. And we're talking about perhaps 300,000-500,000 people. And we haven't seen so many people in the streets of Copenhagen since the end of World War II. So we are talking, not comparing that, but again, it just shows you how crazy things were. So we went, you know, from the airport. It took us about 4 hours to get through a mob of people coming over just to celebrate, to thank us, to handing over, you know, beer bottles and, you know, cases of beer and wine and stuff like that, champagne. And it took us, as I say again, to get into the city center, it took us 4, perhaps even 5 hours. And that was the most crazy experience ever. I mean, you can't prepare yourself for that. And that will stick with me forever. It was crazy. It's one of these moments that even you can dream about as a footballer, as a football player, but to actually experience it, no, that was different class.
Brian Laudrup, European champion. Everybody listening will have been given a stimulus, permission to dream again, and to think that in all our lives, we can achieve a dream, we can do more than we believe we can, that football, even in the time that you and I are speaking, disgusting things have just been announced in European football. This is a breath of fresh air to say, do what you enjoy, be good at it, believe, be a handful in life. Brian Laudrup, thank you for being on The Big Interview.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to The Big Interview. It's produced by me, which sounds egotistical, but it's also true, Graham Hunter, and Back Page. Our music is by Beer Jacket, who else? Editing by Charlie McGarry. Thank you to our hosts at Acast and our loyal sponsors at Bet365. We're also supported by our socios. Find out how to become a socio, how to support us, at patreon.com/Graham Hunter. Here endeth the lesson.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.